Hello world, it is Jesse Rich on the Jesse Rich Podcast, and today I will be doing the biography and story of Zoe, Ivern, Nunu, and Willip from the League of Legends world. I have their stories pulled up again, like I do every time. This is a full blind reading. I have not read this ahead of time, and we will be jumping into Zoe right after this message. It's Jesse Rich talking about one of our sponsors. Our sponsor today is Rose Beauty Products. There's actually three of these, and the first one I'm going to talk about is Red Rose Beauty. Red Rose Beauty is Pure Romance, and their founder and chairman, Patty Betsby, started Pure Romance from the basement of her suburban home in Ohio in 1993. Using the latest sexual health education, the best in must-have beauty products, and the hottest bedroom accessories, Patty has not only empowered, educated, but also entertained the women at her parties, helping them to fulfill their desires while offering them a chance to own their own business and achieve their dreams exactly the way she did. My wife is actually my sponsor on this with Rose Beauty Products. She has three businesses, Red, White, and Blue Rose Beauty, and you can find her on Facebook. Her name is Trina Richards. She has her own VIP group for each individual one. Or if you want to go straight to her shop, you can shop right on my link tree. That's linktr.ee/JesseRich or GHEZRICH. And all three of her businesses are at the very bottom. Thank you. Meet Zoe. The moment she thought of the cake store, Zoe dove into the air, surrendering herself to gravity. While falling, she reached out with her consciousness to form a gateway. Instantly, a portal opened beneath her and connected her to another place, and she fell into the gate. Her mask collided with imploding as she traveled. It kind of tickles. Unfortunately, Zoe did not appear at her intent destination. Instead, she emerged from a second portal only a dozen strides away, propelled through the air by the momentum of her previous fall. Then, after a brief moment of equilibrium, she was pulled back into the second portal. Again, time and space twisted around her, all swooshy-like, as she would describe it. Before flopping her back at the starting point, both portals then folded into space and disappeared. A powerful magic was distorting Zoe's ability to travel. It probably related to whatever change she was supposed to herald, and obviously she hadn't succeeded yet. It was a problem, but not an unfair one. She wasn't really sure what the message was, who it was for, or even what it meant. But in her experience, those details rarely matter. The holy mathematics wanted to advance, and the messages generally fell into a place short after she arrived. Zoe felt that was a pretty cool advantage of being an aspect. Of course, there was now the question of what to do while she waited. Zoe glanced around. Beside a nearby tree, she saw a small, fuzzy creature with a huge tail. It looks similar to a tiny yordle, thought Zoe. Noted how this creature connected to the spirit world was comparatively minuscule. The small animal's life pattern flashed in Zoe's brain. It would live only a dozen rotations before returning its spirit. To her, the brevity of its life made it more adorable. Zoe jumped up and ran to it.
So cute!
The tiny animal scrambled up the tree away from her.
Hey, come back!
She pouted. Without showing her pursuit, Zoe created a time bubble, turning it only half a planet's rotation before launching it at the tree. The anomaly bounced before bursting against the tree trunk. For example, the cute animal's past merged with its present. The night sky overtook the area, and twilight butterflies pulsed around it. The small creature fell into the tired, restful sleep of a previous evening. As it passed, spiritual and mental state overwhelming its current consciousness. Zoe ignored gravity for a moment, floated up the branches, and came to the top beside the tiny animal. Her hand hesitated above its downy fur. She knew the moment she touched the creature, her spell would break. "Zoe is a friend," she whispered. But when she caressed the tiny animal's head, it burst awake and dove away from her in panic. With a disappointed moan, Zoe floated a bit higher before flipping upside down. She considered visiting Ariel's soul after she finished here. The dragon didn't like being petted either, but she thought he was easier to catch without harming. This notion vanished as, thanks to her new attitude, Zoe saw past the hills and spotted a village on the horizon. She willed a portal to the town, into the existence, and dove into it. But again, Zoe was only able to create a gate for a few yards away. Worse, it collapsed upon itself as before and pulled her back straight to the starting point. The summer grass didn't seem inviting, so with no better option, she walked through the forest into the village. She arrived at the outskirts of the walled town as the sun began to set. Hearing laughter, she dismissed gravity for a second to float up on the village's rooftops. In the center of the courtyard, a half a dozen mortals were playing. They were almost exactly Zoe's size, two S's. Unlike the children or adults she had encountered more recently in her tour to the planet. One of the males chased a female around a circle. Both were laughing. The rules of the game were unclear. Zoe focused on the girl's beautiful red dress, wondering if the coloration represented something. Even if it wasn't a part of the game, Zoe liked it. The girl seemed taller than the other females, and Zoe felt the girl might know things she needed to learn. The male was also interesting, but in a completely different way. She could tell his current incarnation would be short-lived. But Zoe suspected it would be amazing if he chased her. There was something wonderful about his chin and the shape of his lips. She swallowed nervously. It had, after all, been a very long time since Zoe was a mortal or had even visited this realm. She was strangely worried the group wouldn't accept her and she would be left out of whatever they were playing. Two of the other boys, decidedly less interesting ones, began kicking a ball between themselves. This game Zoe remembered. Embodied by this connection, Zoe swooped down from the rooftop in the middle of the crowd. "Hi," she said, while turning the base of her hair into the color that mimicked the tall female's dress. "A spirit," the interesting boy said with wide eyes. Then he screamed, "Run!" Zoe felt she should point out she was an aspect rather than a spirit, but she was uncertain if his cry was part of the other game's rules. "Actually, I'm here with a message, but if you want to play, I have plenty of time," she said as she launched after him. She flew as casually as she could alongside the tall girl. "Your red outfit is so cool. What does the color mean?" Zoe asked, but her attempt to start conversation hardly mattered. As she spoke, the tall girl was pulled into the house by an interesting boy, then slammed the heavy wooden door shut, blocking Zoe's path. Zoe glanced around, discovered the other mortals had similarly disappeared, but a commotion could be heard coming from the keep near the center of town. After a moment, a dozen men in armor came running toward Zoe with spears. They reminded her of Pantheon's weapon, local guardians, she surmised. Assuming she was a spirit, they screamed warnings while their leader attempted a banishing spell. It was a very good spell, in Zoe's opinion, but not one she wanted. She wondered if perhaps spirits frequently plagued the town. When the men began throwing their weapons at Zoe, she manifested an arcane meteor and sent it on the flight path around the keep. Then, the Twilight Girl created a pair of portals to dodge the Guardian's spears, before finally redirecting and shooting Star at her attackers. The meteor impacted, creating an implosion, causing a chain reaction with the small particles it had gathered while flying, which resulted in a secondary explosion that thundered through the Guardians and their tower, annihilating the area into a fine dust. "Hello?" Zoe asked as the cloud of destruction whirled around her. She wondered if the tall girl or the interesting boy had run away. It seemed likely. Momentarily dispirited, Zoe decided to visit a large mortal settlement next, and it seemed like someone might be willing to play with her at that sort of a location. Zoe remembered where a city had been a few thousand years ago. On instinct, and despite her previous failures, she willed a portal to it, and she was pleasantly surprised when the gateway opened to her intended destination.
"Oh, cool,"
she said, happy to be able to travel again and eager to deliver her next message. As Zoe stepped out of reality, she wondered if the new crater would lead some mortals to find the world ruin that was nearby. The tall girl or that interesting boy might even be ones to discover it. It would probably be funny if they did, she decided. Zoe, the aspect of twilight. As befits her Targaryen aspect's nature, Zoe did not come to the attention of the celestial realm in any traditional way. She doesn't win a great victory against overwhelming odds, or sacrifice herself for a noble ideal, or overcome the essential trial of climbing Mount Targon. Instead, Zoe was a normal girl, seemingly chosen at random from among Rakar. Her teachers reported Zoe to be an imaginative child, but willful, lazy, mischievous, and easily distracted. One day, as she skipped away from her studies of the holy text to pursue something less boring, she was noticed by the aspect of twilight and observed as a young girl playfully mocked the anger cries of scholarly priests chasing her through the village. Then, after an hour-long pursuit, she found herself cornered against the sheer drop of a cliff edge. Before Zoe's teachers could grab her, the aspect summoned six objects in front of her: a bag of gold coins, a sword, a completed study book, a devotion rug, a silk rope, and a toy ball. Five of these items could let her flee or otherwise defuse the situation. Zoe chose the sixth option. Unconcerned with escape or forgiveness, she instead grabbed the toy ball, kicked it toward the wall of a nearby house, and sang gleefully as it ricocheted among the humorless priest. The aspect hadn't seen such joyful irreverence in the face of peril since its last host, who heralded the end of the Great Darken War. Delighted by Zoe's carefree exuberance, it opened a shimmering portal to the apex Mount Targon, offering a girl a chance to see the universe. She dived backward into the portal, instantly emerging with the aspect, then stuck her tongue out at her dumbfounded teachers as she disappeared. This transition was unique. In fact, it was unheard of in all the myths and legends of Targon. Yet Zoe did not trouble herself with why the rules that govern aspects had been changed just for her. She didn't trouble herself with the rules at all. Instead, she journeyed to dimensions of reality at the very edge of mortal comprehension, playing with powers seen by few before or since. While for Zoe barely a year had passed, she returned home after what had apparently been many centuries in Runeterra. Full of teenage curiosity, she wondered what she had missed while she was away. Fortunately, she could traverse the streams of time with only a thought. Among the events she witnessed were the fall and rise of the big armored meanie, Mordekaiser, the destruction of the Blissed Isles in the Spooky Ghost Party, the cataclysms of the War of Sparky Rocks, and the founding of a Dorne new nation near the No Fun Forest. One thing in particular became clear to Zoe: she was not alone, walking the mortal world were other aspects. In fact, more than ever before, more friends for her to meet. But they brushed her aside time and again, seeming rather preoccupied with whatever it was they were doing in the spaces between realms. Intrigued, Zoe traveled to the stars, where she found a great cosmic dragon, Arianzol. Although he clearly despised her, as he did all of her kind, Zoe always returned to the dragon's side, trying to discover what aggravated him. From his bombastic and self-aggrandizing diatribes, she gleaned that her fellow aspects had humiliated him, crowning him with a cursed artifact to siphon away his power. Zoe felt sorry for this poor space doggy, as she quoted, and vowed to do what she could to protect him. For his part, Arianzol has at least stopped threatening to destroy her when he eventually takes his long overdue vengeance. Rather, Zoe's curious relationship with the Star Forager is due to mere whim, possessiveness, or her function as a cosmic disruptor, no one can be certain. For the scholars and mystics of Mount Targon, the emergence of an aspect is usually a joyous occasion, but Zoe's unpredictability gives them pause, as not even she knows what her presence could pretend. The only certain is Runeterra is on the brink of a profound transformation that may come at a cost of chaos, destruction, and blood. Rose Beauty Products also presents White Rose Beauty. White Rose Beauty is Scentsy. If you have not heard of Scentsy, it'll change your world. Their mission is to bring the value of the world for providing an industry-leading, family-friendly business opportunity by selling creative, artistic, and high-quality products that not only warm the heart, elevate the senses, and inspire the soul. Scentsy was created by Heidi and Orville Thompson back in 2004 when they swang for the fences. They needed to change their lives with wickless candles and decorative warmers, and now it has grown into an international business opportunity with a culture that feels like family. At Scentsy, you have I love yous that are common, hugs are expected, and their biggest annual event is called the Family Reunion. They are passionate for what they do, and sharing fragrances can help change lives, all the way from connecting us to our deepest memories. Sharing those memories with each other is how we grow as a family. If you are interested in Scentsy, then you can click on my link on my link tree, which is linktr.ee/JesseRich or GHEZRICH. And it is at the bottom where you can go directly into the Rose Beauty Products store and get your Scentsy today. Thank you. Ivern, the Green Father. Ivern the Cruel was renowned as a fierce warrior in the later days of the ancient Vorigard. His clan followed the most warlike of the old gods and would not kneel before the upstart's three sisters like so many others had. However, the dark sorcery that strengthened their armies was undeniable. Ivern and his kin plotted long and hard to overcome these hated Iceborns, eventually setting sail to the east in search of land where the sun first rose, from where it was said that all magic flowed into the world. If Ivern could see such power for his own, then he could surely break any foe. As his fleet sailed over the horizon, they passed out of memory and into myth, for they were never seen in their homeland again. In truth, Ivern the Cruel landed on the shores of Iona. After cleaving through a dozen coastal settlements, he and his warriors discovered a sacred grove known as Amakayalalan, or the Heart of the World. And there, in a strange and verdant garden, they met a fiercest resistance. Chimeric beings, half-human, half-beasts, or chimeric beings, I'm sorry, came at them again and again beneath the twisted branches. Undeterred, Ivern pressed on until the battered remnants of his expedition reached what the Ionians held so sacred, the legendary God Willow. Ivern was transfixed, even as the fighting raged around him. It was a truly colossal tree, dripping with long, gossamer leaves that shimmered with golden green light. It was magic like nothing he had ever felt before, and it was clear these inhuman creatures would die to protect it. Seeking to shatter their resolve, he took up his war axe and roared with hatred as he struck the God Willow over and over again. The great tree fell. In a riot of life energy, Ivern the Cruel was instantly undone. Detached, drifting, he saw the battle was over. The flesh of the fallen fled, carrion, birds, and insects alike, or decayed under bursts of colorful mushrooms. Bones rotted into fertile soil, and seeds within it budded and sprouted into trees bearing fruit of their own. Leaves and petals pulsed like colorful hearts. From the death that surrounded him, life exploded forth in ways too numerous to believe. Never had Ivern beheld such a beauty. Life in its all forms was tangled together like an impossible knot that didn't want to be untied. He wept, and those dewdrop tears fell upon his changed body. He was taller than he remembered, his limbs rough with barks and leaves. The magic of an entirely different world coursed through him. He did not know why or how, but he was all that now remained of the God Willow. With that realization, he heard the brawling of hills and the howling of trees, the dripping tears of moss. He reflected on his mistakes he made, the cruelty he visited on others. Remorse washed over Ivern, and he cried out for forgiveness. When he finally moved, so much time had passed that the world felt new. The violence and sadness of his former self were mere echoes in his heart. He found he could dig his toes into deep soil and commune with the roots, the rocks, the rivers. Even the dirt itself had opinions. Ivern wandered off across Iona and beyond, and the strange magic of Amakayalalan followed in his wake. He developed close kinships with creatures great and small, observing their fortibles, delighting in their little habits, and occasionally offered a helping hand. He shortened the inchworm's path, played tricks with mischievous bramblebacks, hugged thorny elmarks, and laughed with wizened elder fungus. In one instance, he found a wounded stone golem. Knowing the poor thing's spirit was fading, he fashioned her a new heart from the river petal, and the golem became Ivern's devoted life friend. He named her Daisy, after the flowers that mysteriously sprouted from her stone body. Sometimes Ivern encountered mortals, and many of them were at least somewhat peaceful. They called him Bramblefoot, or Greenfather, or the Old Woodsman, and told tales of the Strait Benevolence. But he was filled with sadness to see how they still took more than they gave, how they could be so cruel and so careless, and he retreated from their company. If he bore the Godwillow's legacy, he needed to cultivate humanity, help them watch, listen, and grow. Being mortal once himself, Ivern knew this would be difficult, so he smiled and challenged himself to complete his task before the final sunset. He knew he would have time. Last but definitely not least on our Rose Beauty products is Blue Rose Beauty, which is Color Street. But what exactly is Color Street? I'm going to just tell you the story right there. We have color, music, drama, excitement, and a million faces from every corner around the world. That's right, that's New York City. That is the birthplace of Color Street. But how? It began in 1988 when Fall Park was stuck in traffic on a bus, and he looked over and saw a woman in a nearby cab trying to polish her fingernails. He thought there has to be a better way. So he bought a bunch of fingernail polish and started experimenting with it, putting it on different papers. After countless attempts, he had finally created a process where the top was dry and the bottom was still moist, and it could adhere to a nail. Mr. Park's revolutionary vision is 100% fingernail polish was born. Fast forward a couple decades of hard work patenting his product, he is the innovation leader in this beauty industry. All products are proudly made in the USA, which matters deeply to him for the fact that he has achieved his American dream. And to top it all off, he wanted to make himself a party plan division so that he could share this with other dreamers as well. Again, that is Color Street. It is a awesome product. Like I said, 100% fingernail polish, no dry time, extremely easy to put on. I've done my nails. I've never done them before in my life. I have not needed to for the fact that I consider myself a male and never had to do my nails. But I tried it and I put on all black and I was able to put them on myself. Very easy. They have great designs, great overlays, great glitters, great petties. I mean, you name it, they have it. Definitely check them out. That's Color Street. Again, the owner is Trina Richards. You can find her on Facebook to get into her VIP group. Or like all the other links, they are in my link tree, which is linktr.ee/JesseRich or GHEZRICH. Blue Rose Beauty. Check it out. Nunu and Willip, the boy and his Yeti. One of the Notai, a nomadic tribe that long traveled to Freljord, Nunu learned from his mother, Leika, that behind everything is a story. Together they gathered tales that Leika turned into songs. For Nunu, nothing was better than journeying from village to village, hearing his mother sing the ancient heroes. With music and dance and Notai brought one last celebration to everyone they met as each winter chill set in, riding the wave of frost spilling from Anava's wings, his heart beating the rhythm of a jubilant song, Nunu's world was full of possibility. On his fifth name day, Leika gave Nunu a special gift, a flute, so that he could learn to play her melodies himself. In the safe of their cart, the two bundled together and followed the knotted string that served as Leika's heart song, recording everywhere they'd been together as the years came and went. When the caravan was attacked by raiders, Nunu was separated from his mother, dragged to safety by a band of Frost Guard. The surviving Notia children were taken to a village near their towering citadel. Nunu was left to wonder what happened to Leika, waiting to hear her song in the wind. Snow fell and weeks passed. Nunu missed his mother desperately, but the Frost Guard assured him no child could safely search for her. They weren't even impressed when he showed them the flute he now called Svelsonger, the name of a mighty blade existing only in his imagination. Nunu spent more and more time alone, escaping into his mother's songs, the legends and heroes of old. He yearned to be one of these heroes, a warrior like the Frost Guard, who could have saved his mother. He even met their leader, Lysandra, who asked countless questions about his mother's stories, always seeking information about that one particular song. No one believed Nunu could be a hero, not even the other Notian children, who teased him for his flute when they now had daggers. But Nunu knew the songs in his heart, and one night he realized how he could prove himself and earn the Frost Guard's help to find his mother. From Asanja, he learned of a fierce monster that killed all who sought its power, thwarting the Frost Guard, who were sent each year never to return. There was a song that Nunu's mother sang. It could be the one Lysandra would always ask about. Suddenly, Nunu understood. Lysandra wanted to know about the Yeti. Nunu could name the beast. It would answer his challenge and fill the wrath of Svelsonger. Using the flute to tame a herd of Elkrai, Nunu snuck out into the snow. One lonely child traveled to face a monster, finally living out a legend that not even he could imagine. An ancient and noble race that once ruled over the mountains of the Friljord, the Yeti civilization was destroyed in a cataclysm of ice, forced to watch his brethren descending into savagery. After being stripped of their magic, one Yeti swore to protect that the remaining of their power, a gem that swirled with the frozen dreams of any mortal mind nearby. As the last magical Yeti, the Guardian was also shaped by perception. Though he had been chosen to safeguard the magic until it would be needed again, he could find no worthy vessel. The men who intrude upon his ruined home had only malice in their hearts, and so a monster greeted them with fangs and claws. But the Guardian knew he was forgetting something, his name, and the names of those who he had loved. Once there had been a song. That all changed when the young boy stumbled into the ruins. After centuries of unbroken vigil, the monster was prepared to end the boy's life, snarling as he sensed the human approach. Unexpectedly, the gem brought forth images of heroes slaying dragons and beheading ancient serpents from the boy's mind. The child roared, drawing his flute like a fearsome sword. But the blow never came, for even as the boy saw visions of heroes swirling around him, he realized the deeper truths of the song his mother sang. When he looked at the Guardian, he didn't see a monster. He saw someone who needed a friend. Still enraged, the Yeti did not expect the first snowball to the face, or the second. Snowball fight! In anger, then shocked, then joy, the Guardian joined in, shaped not by fear, but by a child's imagination. He was growing furrier and friendlier. His growl was becoming a laugh, until the beast accidentally broke the boy's flute. As the child began to cry, the guardian felt a kindling grief take shape around the gem. For centuries, he had looked into it, and it seemed the end of his people, the threat they had buried, betrayed by the blind one. And now, instead, he saw a caravan burning. He heard a voice on the wind. He sensed something else within the boy, something he had never felt from a human. Not even the three sisters who had come to him long ago. It was love, fighting back in despair. In the moment, the guardian knew that the Filjord's only hope lay in the power already within this child. The magic he'd been guarding was a tool. That truly mattered was the heart that would shape it. With a gesture, the magic passed from the gem into the boy, giving him the ability to make his imagination real, to repair his flute, freezing it in dreams that harden into true ice, to imagine a best friend named Willop. Escaping into the Fajordian plains, Nunu's heart and Willop's strength now enable the pair to do what they never could alone, to have an adventure. Following the songs of Nunu's mother, they snowball wildly from place to place, from place to the next, holding on to the hope that she is still out there, somewhere. But Willop knows that with magic and dreams comes responsibility. One day the game will end as the dark ice at the heart of the Filjord thaws and thaws. Stone Cold, written by David Slagle. I wake up suddenly, like a story that starts in the middle of an action. The song, I hear it. Willop! I shout. I hear the song again, wake up! I shove aside the snow that serves as a blanket and look at my flufferific friend in the face. His whiskers are twitching like they could feel my dream slowly fading. He growls and his breath swirls into a kind of shape. But even though he's old and his hair and has hair in his earlobes or ear holes, still he's my best friend. I laugh as his beard tickles my nose. Nothing like a magical yeti to bring me back to reality. Willop rolls over and starts scratching his grumpy belly. You're always thinking about food. Ha ha ha. I laugh again. Laughing feels good. It helps me remember my mom. We've been following her song across Friljord, my mother's heart song. Everywhere we've been, she's made a verse. And if I could only remember what each place was, I could find my way back to her. I could save her, like a hero in the stories. But I can only remember parts of the song when I'm not trying. And sometimes it's like my mom is out there singing. Like that. Did you hear that? It's coming from the village, I bellow, pointing toward a patch of darkness beneath the frozen waterfall. Something inside me knows that where the song came from. Swords first, Willop, I'll cut through the wind. I shiver as we enter the clearing a few moments later, though I'm surrounded by scrazzly fur. Even this close, the village is mostly shadows. There are no people. If there were, I'd know, because it's so cold, I'd see their breath. What is this place? I ask. Willop growls wisely. Naljag? That can't be its name. How would anyone know how to spell that? Then Willop grumbles that it's the Yeti word for stone. The buildings are stone, heaped really high. The pathways are stone too. Stone's got it, so it's not weird that the flowers are carved out of the stone, right? And those firs hanging over the door, and that old rope. At least it would be rope if it wasn't hard and gray. Is everything around here stones? I asked, it's not fair. And the story stones, at least, have ruins carved into them or something. I'm starting to wonder why the song led me here. When finally I see a person, their back turned beneath the arch, beneath an archway. My name is Nunu, and I'm here to help, I yelled, and I pulled at the person's shoulder. But when they toppled into the light, it was a dull thwunk. I immediately realized that they were stone too. And beyond the archway are all the missing people from the village huddled together like statues. There's one who looks like a warrior, now dull and gray. There's a farmer and his wife holding each other tightly, like they were carved from one slab, and a little girl, a pebble beside them. It's a curse, a real one. Willup, I say, what are we going to do? That's the thing about my mom's songs. My favorites were always tales of heroes, more than a match for any curse. With the lessons I've learned, we can save these people, right? I have to believe, otherwise, how am I going to save her? I remember one song, a myth about how Amaterasu healed the turtle that carries the sea by giving it a big kiss. But I don't want my first kiss to be with a statue. I make Willow kiss him just in case, and watch as the stone gets stuck to his fur. I try saying the prayers that Lysandra taught me, just in case. I make a dragon out of snow to scare the curse away, like Anivia did to fight the southern army. I even tried pulling the sun closer, like how Brahm thawed his village in a song that Mom sang. But the sun's too far. Brahm must have really long arms. Willup tries to comfort me. He says some curses can't be fought. Sometimes heroes don't win. But I remember what matters. I can feel it. Even though my mom is missing, our caravan buried in the snow, the feeling of being loved. That's what this village deserves. If we can't help these people, I tell Willup, then we're going to have to help these statues. I smiled and reached for my flute. I mean, my sword. Slefsanger. Hero time, ha! I can smell the curse. A hateful stench like troll. It has the weight of centuries, weight that could grind years. This child has left down to mere days. Here is where even heroes of songs would question how they could fight, blades powerless against ancient magic. But Nunu is no mere hero. He is something better. He's a boy. He whoops and calls my attention to a frozen waterfall above. We are close enough now that we can see them, nesting atop stillness. Krugs. Stone creatures animated by magic, more than at home living above the village such as this one. Their nests dammed, the waters flowing back, the Freljord's lifeblood. I taste a hint of Nunu's intentions. It tastes like Krugs. Delicious. Hey, stony crabs, you took some from those statues, Nunu yells, and hops onto my back without losing a beat for the music in his heart. The magic is his now, swept up in his imagination. Snow forms before us, gradually taking shape into a mighty snowball. I laugh as we ramble wildly, our merry burdens growing so large that beneath us the village trembles, buildings stretching themselves awake. And still the snowball grows larger. The Krugs make only tiny chitter as we leap into the air on top of the waterfall, bloating out in the sun. The Freljord's goes white, the dam embraced by the snow, even as it is torn apart. And then the earth roars. Icicles crack like bones made brittle by winter. The roar grows louder as the river coughs and clears the dust from its throat, water tumbling into the village below. "Did you see that, Willip?" Nunu asked, but my eyes are already closed. I can feel a magic more powerful than the curse welling up to fill the village, casting shivers through my fur and bringing warmth to the world that is cold. It is the only magic that can save Freljord, even a frozen dreams of many people coveted by the Frost Guard, pale in comparison to the magic held in the abundance by a child. Hope. His arms are around me now, and I hug him back with all four limbs, looking away so he doesn't see the snowflakes falling from my eyes. The curse has not lifted, but still life has returned. And as it spreads, stone flowers washing away to make room for living ones. What curse could stand in its way? No evil can last if life embraces joy and refuses to hide. I reach onto the garden and pick up a chunk of ice, crushing it to snow between my paws. "Hey," Nunu yells as I hit him in the face with a snowball, trailing the magic that swirls in his heart. As we play, the wind whips through the flute on Nunu's back, casting a stray of noise. Then I finally hear it too. Her song. Where waters once roar, winds whisper to stone. In shadow, now Jacques lies. Silence sings, but hope survives. And that was the three stories today, brought to you by the League of Legends team and their League of Legends universe. My name is Jesse Rich. I have a bunch of new stuff on my Linktree. That is linktr.ee/JezzyRich or GHEZRICH. Sponsored by Rose Beauty Products. I have all three of their links at the bottom. That is for Color Street, Scentsy, and Pure Romance. I now have a website that has opened up. I am designing clothing now. My website is jessyrich.com or, again, GHEZRICH.com. And if you want to reach out to me, get on that link tree. I now have a Telegram. I have a WhatsApp. If you add me on Facebook and I add you to the VIB group, that is where I'm going to be doing the most prizes first. After I give out those prizes, I'll be giving prizes for people that subscribe to my Twitch or support my podcast. And those will be exclusive prizes for those people as well. I will also be giving out signature prizes. So definitely try to keep up with all that. Jump into all that. Pretty much every post on all my social media will be similar, but when you add yourself into each social media that I have, you get extra chances to win prizes. I have not released my first prize yet, but that'll be coming soon. Once again, if you want to reach out to me, social media, check out my sponsor, check out my other things that I'm giving out, check out my resume on Fiverr, and other than that, Jesse Rich loves you guys. Y'all take it easy.